to the other committee members moved up in varying levels of shock and surprise. Greyland laughed again. "Thank you, Lord Terran," she said. "Would that all our advisors were so honest in their opinions." "I didn't say that to gain your favor," Asan replied. "You may be assured that we did not think you had," Greyland said. She turned to Corbane, the head of the executive committee. "And as we had anticipated that this would be a matter of concern for the committee, not to mention the interdependency as a whole, we have already ordered Key Drinnen, the royal physician, to make himself available to the executive committee at its pleasure to discuss our current physical and mental state. You may ask him whatever you like." "That's good to hear," Corbane said. "We'll call him very soon." Greyland nodded and then returned her attention to Asan. "Our visions aren't phantom chickens, Lord Terran. They are something else entirely. We can't say we wanted them. Times are difficult enough at the moment without adding this spiritual aspect to them. But we are the Emperor and a direct-line descendant of the Prophet Rekella. The same blood runs through our veins as hers. This is the Holy Empire of the Interdependent States, and the Empire has seen fit to keep the House of Wu on its throne for a millennium. Is it not unreasonable to believe that one of those reasons was to keep open the possibility of revelation?"
"I am skeptical that revelation is a genetically heritable trait, Your Majesty," Asan said.
"Well, if we are honest, so are we," Greyland said. "And yet, here we are. We, like Rekella, are the head of the Interdependent Church, a church that was founded on the basis of revelation. We, like Rekella, have had our revelation at the cusp of an immense change in the nature of humanity's existence in space. We, like Rekella, are called to shepherd our people through crisis."
"This is the collapse of the flow, your scientist alleges."
Greyland smiled. "Have you seen the list of ships that arrived to Hub from End in the last month, Lord Terran?"
"We have."
"The list is very short, because the number is zero. They're not here because they never left End. The flow stream from here to there has collapsed. If memory serves, one of the ships that has yet to arrive is one of yours. By which, I mean, one from the House of Asan, scheduled to arrive from End 3 weeks ago. I seem to remember my tariffs assessor mentioning it."
Asan looked uncomfortable. "It's still within its acceptable window for arrival."
"And there is a civil war going on at End," Ranatunga noted. "That will have some effect on the arrival of ships. The committee may suppose it has the luxury of assuming pedestrian causes for the late arrival of every single ship from one of our states," Greyland said. "We don't. The Count Claremont, at the direction of my father, studied the data from flow streams for 3 decades and predicted to within hours the collapse of the flow stream from End to Hub. Within another month, the flow stream from Hub to Ter Hatum is very likely to be next. We have made all this data available to this committee, to Parliament, and to scientists. And Lord Mars, the Count Claremont's son, has stayed to explain the data to everyone who chooses to listen."
"And yet, neither Parliament nor the scientists are entirely convinced," murmured Corbane.
"There is a lot of data to cover, and unfortunately, not very much time," Greyland said. "We regret to say they are likely to be better convinced when the Ter Hatum flow collapses."
"If,"
Asan said. Greyland shook her head. "When?"
"And you've seen this in your visions," Asan said, pushing.
Greyland smiled at this. "One does not need visions when one has data. In both cases, however, one does need to be willing to see. We need this committee to see both. We need you to understand the data. We need you to have faith. And if you will not do either, then, yes, Lord Terran, we will accept simple obedience. That will do for now." She stood, obliging her executive committee to stand in return. Then she nodded, acknowledging them, and left the room. I think I may have made a mistake, Cardenia Wu Patrick said to the ghost of her father. Ottavio the Sixth, or more accurately, his ghost, or even more accurately, the computer simulation of Ottavio the Sixth, fashioned from a lifetime of recorded memories, emotions, and actions, nodded.
You may have, he said.
Thanks. Cardenia, who, when in her full majesty, was called Greyland the Second, said. Your vote of confidence here is inspiring. The two of them were in the memory room, a large and largely unadorned room accessible only to the current Emperor. Inside of it was a virtual assistant named Jiyi, who could, when asked, call up the avatar of any of the previous Emperors, down to and including the first, Raikela. When Cardenia's time as Emperor was done, her memories, emotions, and actions would also be downloaded to serve the uses of whomever would be the next Emperor. If there was going to be one, which at the moment struck Cardenia as a question without a very good answer. I was only agreeing with you, Ottavio the Sixth said. You seemed upset, and I thought agreeing with you might make you feel better.
Not in this particular case, I have to say.
We need to work on your program's ability to pick up emotional cues.
Well then, Ottavio folded his hands together, standing while his daughter sat. Give me more detail on what you think you've made a mistake about.
About saying that I'm having visions.
About the end of the interdependency.
Yes.
Oh, well, yes, you probably did make a mistake about that. Cardenia threw up her hands. I'm wondering what you expected, Ottavio the Sixth said.
Are you really?
To the extent that I am able to, yes.
Tell me why.
You are attempting to recreate what Raikela did, but you don't have Raikela's starting conditions. You don't have the support of the Wu family or its resources to support you in other areas. You don't have the leverage with the noble houses to make deals. The only support you have is likely to be the interdependent church, and that only grudgingly. Finally, you're not building an empire. You're attempting to dismantle one. One that has been successful for 1,000 years.
I know all of that, Cardenia said.
I also consider that we've already had one flow stream closed up and that more will close soon after. I know that I don't have time to build consensus in the parliament or among the guilds or even among scientists before things start to fall apart. I need to get out ahead of the crisis in a way that lets me save as many people as possible. The way to do that is through the church, and the way to do that is in a way that gives the church no doctrinal way to argue, by claiming prophecy.
You do understand that no doctrinal way to argue does not mean no argument, Ottavio the Sixth said. A church is an institution separate from the religion it serves. It's filled with people, and you know how people are.
Cardenia nodded. I thought I understood that.
But now you have doubts.
I do. I didn't think that I could turn the church instantly. I'm not stupid. But I thought there would be more cooperation, more understanding of what it was that I was doing.
You haven't expressed this to the leaders of the church, Ottavio the Sixth said. Cardenia snorted and looked at her father. I'm not that stupid either, she said. As far as the church is concerned, I am serenely confident of my visions.
The executive committee, too. I met with them today and told all of them I needed their faith.
I thought Lord Terran's head at least might explode from rage.
I didn't know him, Ottavio the Sixth said.
I knew his father. The House of Asan is a close political ally to the House of Wu.
Cardenia nodded again. It's why Lord Terran was placed on the committee, I think. The guilds thought they needed to make it up to me for putting Nadashe Nohama Peton on the committee first. But I'm not sure Lord Terran is any better. With Nadashe Nohama Peton, at least, you knew she was plotting for herself and her family. I'm not at all sure what Lord Terran is up to.
You can find out, Ottavio the Sixth suggested.
I don't think we're there yet.
You're the Emperor. You're always there yet.
Lord Terran Asan swiped his hand over the lock for his suite in the family apartments in Xi'an. His suite was currently minimally appointed. Most of his belongings were still in his larger apartments in Hubfall, where prior to his current assignment, he'd been acting as the House of Asan's managing director for operations in system. Asan's ascent to the Imperial Executive Committee was a coup for the House of Asan, which had been angling to be on the committee for literally centuries. It was always denied a spot because the House of Asan was famously allied with the House of Wu, and the House of Wu was nominally headed by the Emperor. In point of fact, the Emperor's almost never meddled in the day-to-day operations of the House of Wu. The Wu Board of Directors, assembled from ranking cousins of the Wu family, would resent it intensely. And anyway, the Emperor had the rest of the interdependency to run. Nevertheless, the other guilds and their respective noble houses believed the Asan-Wu relationship too close for political comfort. The last thing they wanted on the executive committee was another potential reflexive cheerleader for the policies of whomever was the sitting emperor at the time.
But then Nadashe Nohama Piton had to go and try to assassinate Greyland II. Once, for sure, possibly twice. The jury was still out on that one. Actually, the jury had yet to be impaneled for that one, but the metaphor still held.
And regardless of that, did manage to kill her older brother in the process, foment a rebellion on the planet of End with the help of her other brother, and generally act in all sorts of obviously traitorous ways. Suddenly, a little light fluffing of the Emperor seemed like just what the guilds had ordered. And so, enter for the first time the House of Asan onto the executive committee. Asan was obliged, as the ranking family member in system, to take on the responsibility. Asan thought it was a real waste of his time. Greyland, and here Asan winced involuntarily because he had met the Emperor when she was still Cardinia Wu Patrick and not been impressed by her in any way whatsoever. She was about as qualified to be Emperor as Asan was qualified to juggle knives, was obliged to meet with the committee and hear their concerns and advice. But she wasn't obliged to consider or follow them in any substantial manner, and it was clear by the end of Asan's first meeting, nearly a month prior now, that Greyland mostly came to the meetings to get them over with. This was especially problematic, because Greyland, immediately prior to his arrival on the committee, had dropped her nonsense about the shift in the flow streams, trotting out some twit named Lord Mars who purported to have evidence of the same. Mars was, it had to be said, not exactly the most convincing of public speakers, either in front of the committee or testifying in front of Parliament. And while the growing lack of shipping from End was beginning to concern a number of houses, including Asan's, the Emperor was correct that one of their fivers, the "and for this gift I feel blessed," was now worryingly overdue. The fact that the Emperor's lackey announced that the next flow stream collapse would be to the home system of the Nohama Petons was a little on the nose. It hadn't happened yet in any event. Until, or if, it did, there were all sorts of reasons for ships to be held up at End without the drastic explanation of a flow stream collapse, including an imperial freeze on spaceship movement. Which led to the question of what exactly it was that Greyland II was actually playing at, and how long she thought she could play at it before it all fell down around her, and whether these goddamned visions of hers were now just another tactic to keep her whatever damn fool game she was running going for a few more days or weeks. All things considered, Asan felt he should have just stayed in his office and stuck to his own business, which was not to say that he wasn't going to use his current situation to his own advantage. Asan walked over to his bar, put ice in a tumbler, poured whiskey over it, and then called Jason Wu, board member for the House of Wu, on a secure line. "You wanted a report on this session?" Asan asked. Jason grunted, and Asan hit the highlights, including the discussion of Greyland's visions. "She asked us to have faith," Asan finished up. "For fuck's sake," Jason Wu said, disgusted. "The House of Wu makes starships. She's wandering around saying the flow is collapsing. We've had orders drop 40% off their usual clip. It's like she's trying to destroy her own family." "She never really was part of the family, was she?" Asan murmured. "It was Renneret who was supposed to take over everything." "Until he drove a car into a wall, yes," Jason said. "Stupid. That is, if Nadashe Nohama Piton didn't have him killed by messing with his car." "She's not really a problem anymore for you." "She's still alive, so she's still a problem, for now."
"For now?" Asan asked. Jason ignored this. You need to get a one-on-one meeting with Greyland, he said. Find out what's really going on with her. I've been trying to get a meeting with her since I arrived, Asan protested. I keep being shoved down the schedule. You should ask for a meeting with her and take me with you. That's not usually done, Jason said. The Emperor has an annual courtesy meeting with the House of Wu board once a year, and otherwise everything is handled by underlings. The Emperor claiming visions isn't usually done either, Asan pointed out. Jason grunted again at this. I'll think about it, he said, and switched off. Asan took a sip from his whiskey and placed a second secure call, this one to Darren Wu, cousin of Jason, also on the board of the House of Wu. You wanted a report on this session? Asan asked, and then gave Darren roughly the same report he'd given Jason. You gave Jason the same report? Darren asked. Pretty much, Asan said. And his reaction? He's concerned that we'll affect shipbuilding. Darren snorted. That's because he's an idiot. Anything we lose on ships, we gain in weapons sales and security assignments. In the short term, Asan pointed out, if the Emperor is correct about the flow streams collapsing, Darren made a dismissive motion. Greyland's loopy, and it's not going to take that long for the rest of the house to recognize that and take steps. What's that mean? It means you don't need to worry about it right now, and that it would have been nice if Nadashe Nohama Peten had managed to finish the job when she sent that shuttle to plow into my dear cousin. That was a piece of work. I don't think Jason is pleased she's still alive. Nadashe Nohama Peten, I mean, not Greyland. Trust me, I'm well aware of Jason's opinions on that matter. He's not shy about that. It wouldn't look great for the Emperor if something were to happen to Nohama Peten. No, Darren said. And that's not how I would want that particular chess piece to be taken off the board. Either chess piece, in this case. Which is another thing you don't need to worry about right now, Taren. Of course. You should try to get a meeting with Greyland one-to-one. She's ducking me. Well, let's see what we can do about that, shall we? Darren smiled and then cut the connection. Asan smiled too, but to himself. He finished his drink and made his third and final call for the evening. Yes, the voice on the other end said. I'm calling for Lady Nohama Peten. She is indisposed. I'm aware of that. I'm also aware I can leave a message with you and it will get to her. What is it? I believe she will want a report on this session. There was silence on the other end of the line. Then, go on. Chapter 3. As the assassin came at her with a toothbrush shiv, Nadashe Nohama Peten's first thought on the matter was, well, that took longer than I had expected. She had been in the Imperial holding facility for more than a month at that point. The fact Greyland II was only sending someone for her now was borderline offensive. Her second thought, which she vocalized, was, oh shit. Whether one is theoretically expecting to get a toothbrush or whatever through the ribs, when the sharpened object is honing in on you, carried by someone who looks like her job on the outside was strangling livestock, it's all right to let out a little profanity. To be honest, it was just a capper on a really less than spectacular month for Nadashe Nohama Peten. But then she'd known the risks when she set up her brother Amit, in more than one sense of the term, with Greyland on that starship tour, and then shoved a shuttlecraft into the cargo bay at full speed. She knew them, and that they were manageable. After all, it was entirely reasonable to expect that the result of that would have been the Emperor smeared over the deck of the bay, or sucked into the vacuum of space, or some combination of the two. The shuttle was big enough, it would be going fast enough, and the bay large enough. Really? It was just bad luck that the proximity alarms had triggered literally seconds too soon, giving Greyland just enough time to be shoved under a rapidly closing vacuum door. She then also managed to survive the newly constructed ship tearing itself apart due to rotational forces, sealed off in a passage tube that was slowly leaking air. Greyland should have been dead by shuttle.
then by the deconstruction of the ship, and then, finally, by simple clean lack of oxygen. And that's not even talking about the assassination attempt at her coronation. Greyland was, literally, a lucky bastard. Nadashe? Not so much these days. So here's the rundown. Cal Doric, Nadashe's personal lawyer, had told her shortly after she was taken into custody. Murder in the first degree for Ahmet. Murder in the first degree for the shuttle pilot. Murder in the second degree for both Greyland and Ahmet's security people. Attempted murder for all the rest of the security contingents. Attempted manslaughter for the starship crew. There are several dozen counts here. Attempted murder of the Emperor, attempted assassination of the Emperor, which is technically a separate offense from attempted murder, and of course, treason.
Is that all? Nadashe asked.
Doric looked at her oddly but went on. For the moment, I understand the House of Nohama Peten, your house, is currently debating whether or not to ask the state to charge you with destruction of property. The House of Lagos, whose shuttle you stole, will almost certainly ask for those charges, but has not yet. And further charges may be added to the docket, pending further investigation.
So, what are we looking at? Nadashe asked.
In terms of sentencing. Doric was dumbfounded. Death, Nadashe, he finally said. For treason, that's traditionally the go-to sentence. You have a chance for death on the first-degree murder cases. For the second-degree charges, life imprisonment. Attempted assassination is typically a life sentence. Lesser sentences for the multiple attempted murders, but the state has already told me that they will argue for them to be served consecutively, not concurrently. Nadashe looked around the drab meeting room the two of them sat in, painted in industrial greens and grays.
So, best-case scenario is something like this for the rest of my life, and the next several lives to boot.
That's the best-case scenario, yes, Doric said. That's the highly optimistic scenario.
Any deals on the table?
Not really, Doric said. When the state believes you tried to assassinate the Emperor, it's going to want to set an example.
Well, Nadashe said, and folded her hands on the table between her and her personal lawyer.
That is simply unacceptable. Doric paused, appeared to be about to say something, and then closed his mouth. He adjusted his suit and then reached for his stylus and pad. So, not guilty is what I'm hearing from you.
Of course. I'm entirely innocent.
Of everything.
Absolutely everything.
The idea that I would try to kill Ahmet, my brother who I loved, is offensive. And as for Greyland, her brother was once my fiancé.
My brother was hoping to be her fiancé.
There is no reason, given either of those, that I would want her dead. All of this is ludicrous. I'm not guilty of anything.
Doric looked over. What? Nadashe said. I mean, you did admit to treason, Doric said. You suborned an entire ship full of Imperial Marines and sent it through the flow shoal to end in order to support your attempted takeover of that planet. You said it to the Emperor herself and the entire executive committee.
Excited utterance, Nadashe said. That's not how excited utterance works legally, but okay. Bravado, in the heat of the moment, Nadashe continued, undeterred, brought on by being accused of my own brother's death.
Honestly, I don't remember much of what I said at that point.
There are recordings.
I'm sure there are. But I'm fuzzy on the details. A psychological evaluation might be in order to confirm I have a gap in my memory there. Doric looked doubtful at this. Greyland has ordered a top-to-bottom investigation of the service to find out who else you might have suborned.
I haven't suborned anyone. It was Ahmet.
Ahmet?
Yes.
Your dead brother, who was attempting to marry the Emperor.
He always believed in having a plan B.
His plan B involved killing himself?
People do dramatic things, Nadashe said.
And I think you'll find in your investigation that Ahmet had left instructions that, in the event of his death, the prophecies of Raykella was to make its way to end.
Will I now? Doric said, making a note.
Absolutely. A claim that is entirely unverifiable, because if the Emperor was correct, The flow stream from end to here has already collapsed. If you believe such a thing, yes. Still, your operational knowledge of Amit's plans appears extensive. I was investigating him. Doric looked up over his pad, eyebrows arched. For treason. Among other things, yes. And you didn't think to bring this to the attention of the Emperor, the Executive Committee, or, for that matter, the appropriate law enforcement authorities, of which there would be several?
Amit was my brother, Cal, Nadashe said. I had to be sure.
So, to be clear, all of this... Doric waved the hand holding the stylus in an effort to encompass the enormity of the crimes that Amit had attempted. On Amit, yes. Is there anyone to corroborate any of your claims?
My brother Grenny, Nadashe said. The two of them were very close.
Grenny, also at end and thus also unable to be called to corroborate your claims here.
Yes, unfortunate.
Quite, Doric said, in a tone that was maybe 2 degrees off from being entirely sincere. Nadashe was glad her lawyer was quick on the uptake.
Well, this is certainly an alternate theory of the case, isn't it?
Yes, Nadashe agreed.
One that will take some time to investigate. Weeks, certainly months, probably.
Years? You should take all the time you need, Nadashe said. I am willing to wait for justice.
I'm sure you are, Doric said, and paused. This won't be cheap. And to put this indelicately, the House of Nohamapitan is up in the air about whether to fund your defense.
Nadashe nodded. Write this down.
She rattled off a long string of numbers.
Take that to the Imperial Bank in Hubfall, the branch across from the Guild House.
If this account's in your name, it may have already been seized.
It's not in my name. It's in yours.
Well, Doric said, I wish I'd known about my windfall earlier.
I'd have preferred you never knew about it at all, Nadashe said. And yet, here we are.
Doric nodded and stood. The next time we meet, we'll be at the arraignment.
I want bail, Nadashe said.
Let me remind you that you are to be charged with the attempted assassination of the Emperor, Doric said. Getting bail is... optimistic.
Try anyway.
Cal Doric tried, arguing, not entirely unreasonably, that as an accused but entirely innocent attempted assassin, one of the other inmates might try to hurt or kill her out of a desire for notoriety, or a misplaced hope that murdering an attempted assassin of the Emperor might better their own chance at a parole or commutation. The reigning judge was, to put it mildly, not convinced. But he grudgingly admitted the need for extra security for Nadashe. After offering solitary confinement for the duration of her pretrial stay, the judge instead gave Nadashe her own cell in the medium security wing of the Emperor Hane II secured correctional facility 30 clicks outside of Hubfall. The correctional facility was deemed secured because there was no underground passenger rail in or out of the facility. The only way in or out was overland. As Hub was a tidally locked airless planet where the temperature was either 300 degrees or minus 200 degrees centigrade, depending which side of the planetary terminator line one chose to wander off from, the overland route was not, shall we say, a pleasant drive in the best of circumstances. Only approved vehicles were allowed to approach. Unapproved vehicles approaching the facility were warned at 3,000 meters, targeted at 2,000 meters, and destroyed one click out. No one was going to go up to the surface of the planet for alone time. In the month after her arrival, Nadashe kept to herself, stayed out of everyone's way, and avoided trouble. This was aided by the fact that she was ordered to take meals by herself, which were brought to her cell, and that her shower time was taken in the infirmary area, which had stalls and secured bathing facilities. Once a week, she met with Doric, who kept her up to date on the outside world, informing her of how the House of Lagos was given administration of Nohamapitan businesses in system, how Greyland II had sparked a social and political crisis by warning about the upcoming collapse of the flow streams,
and more recently, how the Emperor had begun to claim religious visions, like Ray Kella in the early days of the interdependency. Nadashe, who had more context than nearly everyone else in the universe for these last two actions, said nothing to her lawyer about her thoughts, and instead focused on the House of Lagos taking over the House of Nohama Peten's administration.
"Who's their point person?" she asked.
"Lady Kiva Lagos," Doric said.
"Oh. Her.
You two know each other?"
"She used Granny as a boy toy when we were in college."
"How is she running the house's business?"
"From the outside, she seems to be doing fine."
"And from the inside?"
"No one from the inside is talking that much to me at the moment."
"Well, that's rude." Doric shrugged.
"You are accused of murdering the head of the company and destroying its newest and most expensive ship, for which, incidentally, the insurance policy has been voided. Since you were an officer of the company at the time of the alleged incident, the insurers are arguing attempted insurance fraud."
"That's ridiculous. Given the cost, that would normally make the House of Nohama Peten have a vested interest in you being found not guilty.
But since you are trying to pin everything on Amit," Doric shrugged,
"it's not inclined to participate, especially now that Kiva Lagos is running things."
"For now."
Doric nodded.
"It seems likely your mother will dispatch one of your cousins and a phalanx of lawyers from Terhatum to wrest control back, but they haven't arrived yet, and considering that Greyland suggests that the flow stream to Terhatum may be on the verge of collapse, that adds another level of drama to the situation. I'll be subpoenaing people and documents soon enough, but as you've said, we're not in a rush."
Nadashe filed that away.
"And how goes the delaying of the trial date?"
"Surprisingly well. The prosecution wants more time to lay out its own case. It wants to make this as open and shut as possible. I am encouraging them to take as much time as they like."
"Good.
Is there a reason for the delay other than possibly keeping you alive that much longer?"
"Isn't that enough?" Nadashe asked.
"It is," Doric said. "But as your lawyer, I would prefer to know if there's anything else that's going on relevant to the case."
"Why do you ask?"
Doric opened up a physical folder and pulled out an actual piece of paper and slid it over to Nadashe. "I got a call the other night. You might find the substance of the call of interest." Nadashe read the paper silently. "Now, there's nothing there that I found particularly relevant to your legal case, so I don't feel obliged to share it with the prosecution as I might normally," Doric continued. "That is, unless you tell me it is relevant, in which case I will share it." Nadashe slid the paper back to Doric.
"I don't think it's relevant, no. Seems like someone might be trying to prank you, or to get you to act in a certain way."
"That's a distinct possibility," Doric said, taking the paper back. "This is obviously a high-profile case, and I do get a lot of crank messages about it.
Do let me know if you get any similar messages."
"Of course." On the way back to her cell, Nadashe mused on the note Doric had showed her, from Taryn Asan, whom she knew socially. Asan was both a grasping social climber and a prick with a too high opinion of himself, but he'd also been useful more than once with inside information about his own house and the House of Wu. The fact that he was taking up her seat on the executive committee and was now wanting to share information about the Emperor and his contacts within the House of Wu was very interesting. Nadashe knew this largesse would not come free, and that at some point there would need to be payment of one sort or another, but that was for another time. For now, Nadashe's brain was busy putting puzzle pieces together. So busy, in fact, that she didn't notice the assassin with the toothbrush shiv until she was roughly three steps in front of her and closing fast.
"Oh, shit," Nadashe said.
And then the assassin reached out, hooked Nadashe by the neck, pushed her down to the deck, and drove the toothbrush shiv into the carotid artery of the woman behind Nadashe, who had been closing in on her with a different shiv entirely, this one sharpened from a spoon. Spoon shiv, clearly surprised by the sudden appearance both of the toothbrush shiv-wielding woman and the toothbrush shiv now lodged in her neck, dropped her own shiv and pawed ineffectually at the toothbrush in her artery. Toothbrush lady slapped her hands aside, and with an open palm, drove the toothbrush farther in, eliciting a strangulated gasp.
Then she grabbed Spoonshiv by the front of her prison shirt and hurled her over the side of the railing. Spoonshiv dropped the 4 meters to the prison deck, made a wet thud, and died. Toothbrush looked down and then picked up Spoonshiv's weapon. She brandished it at Nadashe. "Don't bring a spoon to a toothbrush fight," she said. She tossed it into the nearest cell. "What?" Nadashe said, confused. Toothbrush motioned in the direction of Spoonshiv. "You know who that was from?" Nadashe collected herself. "I assume Greyland." "Close, but no. That was from Jason Wu." "Okay," Nadashe said. "And who are you from?" "I'm from Darren Wu, and I have a proposition from him to you." By now, the guards and other inmates had crowded around Spoonshiv's corpse, looking up to see Nadashe there. "Don't worry about that," Toothbrush said. "That's fixable." "Good to know. Do you want to hear the proposition?" Nadashe looked back to Toothbrush and thought to herself, "Well, this took longer than I expected, too." "I'm listening," she said to Toothbrush, and noticed the guards coming up the stairs to them. "Better make it quick." Chapter 4. Kiva Lagos looked around the empty warehouse that she stood in the middle of and then turned to Gay Patz. "You brought me down here to look at fucking nothing," she said. Gay Patz, the House of Lagos' top forensic accountant, nodded. "You are looking at nothing," she agreed. "But what you are supposed to be looking at is a warehouse filled with several million marks of Nahamapitan grain and other merchandise, ready to be shipped." Kiva blinked at this. "So was it shipped?" "It might have been," Pat said. "But if it was, it wasn't done legally, or to the legal buyers. And, more likely, that none of it arrived here at all. 10 million marks worth of inventory. Vanished."
"But on the books," Kiva said.
"Yes, on the books, it's all here. Along with another 40 million or so marks of inventory that's supposed to be in other Nahamapitan warehouses across Hub, which is also not there."
"Merchandise we've already accepted the fucking money for," Patz nodded.
"Everything that was supposed to be in this warehouse was ordered and paid for. Everything in those other warehouses was also ordered and paid for. The House of Nahamapitan, and now you, because you've been given the responsibility for administering the Nahamapitan's business, is on the hook for that 40 million marks worth of merchandise. But there's good news."
"Yeah? What's that?"
"The inventory was destined to go out of the system. The Emperor says the flow streams are collapsing, so it's possible they'll do so before you're legally required to fulfill the order."
Kiva snorted at this and looked around again at the empty warehouse. "Why am I only finding out about this now?"
"About this warehouse?"
"Yes,"
Patz shrugged. "For as much money as involved in this little graft scheme, it's less than 1% of the local inventory for the House of Nahamapitan, and of course even less than that for the total amount of house merchandise. The inventory comes and goes, so these warehouses don't stay empty for long." She waved at the warehouse. "We caught these mostly because House of Lagos taking over for the Nahamapitans meant we had to do an audit. In a few more days, this warehouse and several of the others would be full up again."
"How the fuck were they hiding this?"
"That's the magic of having your clients weeks or months away. When the shipments arrive, if there are any shortfalls, the orders are either adjusted to factor in the missing inventory or made good with a later shipment. In both cases, the shrinkage is chalked up as business losses and deducted out of taxes. In order to see it as anything else, you'd have to do an audit of the entire business."
"Which the Nahamapitans weren't going to do because they were the ones skimming," Kiva said.
"Well," Patz's voice held a note of caution, "we don't have any concrete evidence of that yet."
"Except for Nadashe Nahamapitan apparently funding an attempted fucking coup of the interdependency out of petty cash."
"There is that," Patz murmured.
"Are we going to be able to cover these shortfalls?" Kiva asked. "Unlike the fucking Nahamapitans, we can't actually pretend this inventory fell off the ship in the middle of the flow."
"That's out of my department," Pat said. "I imagine you can shift things around, but regardless, you're out the 50 million marks."
"I'm having my people go through the accounting for the last decade to find out how extensive this skimming operation actually was."
"You think you're going to find more?"
Pat looked at her boss levelly.
Lady Kiva, graft on this scale doesn't just happen. We're probably looking at hundreds of millions of marks worth. Possibly billions.
Coups don't come cheap, Kiva said.
I suppose not, ma'am.
Do we know where the fucking money is, at least?
Not yet. We don't have the authority to go looking outside of the House of Nohama Peton's local account. The personal accounts of the family members and any other unrelated accounts are outside our purview. I'm sharing information with the Imperial Ministry of Revenue, of course. They'll be able to do a more extensive investigation. Any money they find, I want back. I have to warn you that the Ministry of Revenue is very unlikely to honor that request.
Fuck them.
Yes, agreed Pats. But there's the matter that the House of Nohama Peton probably owes back taxes and penalties. That will almost certainly be worth more than the amount of the actual missing money.
Kiva grumped about this. Then, so how much of this is going to be blamed on me?
I think that depends on who is assigning blame, Pats said. I don't think Greyland or the Tax Ministry is going to hold it against you. If, for no other reason, then almost all of this, Pats waved again, predates your administration.
The House of Nohama Peton itself may try to, however, especially in light of some recent events.
What recent events?
Well, that's the other thing we found in the audit. Sabotage.
Of inventory, of machines, of ships. All in the last month since the House of Lagos took charge.
How much?
Pat said nothing but gave Kiva a look that she interpreted as saying a whole fuck ton.
And I reiterate something I just said. And I'm only finding out about this now?
You're the new boss. Some people don't want to tell you.
And the others?
Well, they want to wreck you, ma'am.
3 hours later, Kiva was back at the guild house in her office. It was the former office of the equally former Amit Nohama Peton, who, courtesy of his sister, had recently found himself on the business end of a shuttlecraft, and then smeared across roughly an acre of cargo bay deck as the shuttlecraft rolled over and then in him like a dog in a manure pile. Kiva didn't think this was a very good way to go, but the more she reflected on it, the more she decided there were worse ways. Amit was dead before he knew it. And at least people would be talking about how he died for years. So much more interesting than your basic stroke or heart attack. It was, in fact, the most interesting thing about Amit at all, which Kiva judged was not a great testament to the life he had bothered to live. The now dead and somewhat smeary Amit Nohama Peton's office was roomy, as befitted the head of his family's operations in the hub system. Tastefully appointed in the manner that strongly implied, it was furnished entirely through the preferences of a hired interior decorator, rather than Amit's own inclinations, if he had any, which he probably hadn't, and larded with all the technological assistance and innovations that any modern executive could want or need.
All except for a, hey, your fucking sister is planning to shove a shuttle up your ass alert, Kiva thought to herself. Which, to be fair, was admittedly a specialized item.
Kiva had that thought as she was looking out the transparent glass wall of the office down toward the street below. Aside from the usual street noise of Hubfall, the largest city in the interdependency, as imperial capitals have historically tended to be, there was an extra layer of volume coming from what looked like a protest below. Kiva was too far up to see the signs or hear clearly whatever was being chanted, but whatever it was about, the crowd seemed pretty excitable.
Lady Kiva.
Kiva turned her head and saw Buntin Salanadon, her and previously Amit Nohama Peton's executive assistant. Kiva had kept him because it wasn't his fault he had been employed by an ineffectual traitor to the interdependency, and also he knew things that Kiva didn't, and didn't want to have to wait weeks or months to learn herself. So far, he'd been both appropriately grateful he hadn't been sacked and actually useful in terms of Kiva trying to run the House of Nohama Peton's businesses like something other than a carpet-bagging asshole. Kiva motioned with her head to the glass.
What are they protesting?
Salanadon walked to his boss and glanced down the street. It's not a protest exactly, I think. The Emperor has said that she's been having visions about the future of the interdependency. I believe the people below are supporting her.
Huh.
Solanodon glanced over to Kiva. Did Her Majesty mention anything about these visions when you met with her, Lady Kiva?
No, Kiva said. When I met her, she was mostly still recovering from your old boss's sister blowing up a spaceship around her. She didn't talk all that much. She thanked me for helping uncover Nadashe's plot and told me I'd be in charge around here. Then I got shoved off.
Still, an honor to meet the Emperor.
It was all right. I think she may be fucking my old boy toy now.
Ma'am? Solanodon said.
Kiva waved him off. Not important. You came to see me about something?
Yes, ma'am. A lawyer is here.
Toss him out a window. Her, actually, I think.
So toss her out then, equally defenestratable.
I would, but this one is from the house of Nohamapeton.
Someone who works for me now.
I'm afraid not, Solanodon said. This lawyer here is from Terhatu.
That's... I know what and where Terhatum is, Kiva said. She's from the fucking home office.
Yes, ma'am.
Does the math even work on that?
Terhatum is 15 days away from Hub by the flow, so yes, barely.
What does she want?
I believe she wants to discuss your administration of the local Nohamapeton properties.
Then she better bring it up with the Emperor, since she's the one who put me here.
She suggested there were other issues as well.
More for the Emperor.
I'm afraid she can't be put off. She is carrying a signet document.
Kiva frowned at this. Well, fuck.
A signet document was a legal document that gave the bearer the same standing as the ranking member of a house. From a legal point of view, Kiva couldn't avoid this fucking lawyer, since it would have been the same as avoiding the Countess Nohamapeton, which was not to be done. Technically speaking, and despite the Emperor's dispensation, Kiva, in her new role as director, was the Countess's employee.
She's currently in the waiting area, Solanodon said.
Fine, Kiva said. Send her in. Might as well get this over with.
Yes, ma'am. Solanodon bowed his head slightly and exited.
Kiva glanced once more down at the placarded crowd in the street and wondered briefly how many of them were true believers and how many of them Greyland had paid for. Emperors had hired crowds for subjects less weighty than mystical visions, after all, and if the interdependency was about to come to a crashing halt, then she might as well spend her marks before they were all worthless. Not bad advice for you, either, Kiva thought to herself.
Right.
But the problem with that was, for a rich person, Kiva was spectacularly unmotivated by money. She liked money, and she liked that she had money, and she was aware that a life lived without money would well and truly suck. But having had enough money all her life for literally anything she ever wanted to do, being the daughter of the head of a noble merchant family had its perks, she never thought about money, and her own material needs were fulfilled with a small percentage of the money she had available to her. Instead, Kiva had two primary pursuits. Fucking, which she was enthusiastic about nearly but not entirely to the point of indiscrimination, and running things, which she enjoyed and which, as it was turning out, she wasn't all that bad at. Kiva was not under the impression that she would ever be running the House of Lagos, as late addition to the Countess Huma Lagos's already numerous family, she was out of contention for inheriting the role of the primary director of the House of Lagos, and, despite the example set by Kiva's erstwhile college chum, Nadashe Nohamapeton, was not inclined to murder siblings to improve her chances. But the universe was wide enough to give Kiva things of her own to run. Like, in this case, the Nohamapeton's business. For now, anyway. Until either the Nohamapeton's grabbed it back from her, or all the flow streams collapsed and they were all fucked anyway. Exciting fucking times, Kiva thought to herself.
The door opened and Solanodon came through with a woman roughly Kiva's age.
Lady Kiva Lagos, Madam Senia Fundapalonin,
Solanodon said, motioning to Fundapalonin.
Lady Kiva,
Fundapalonin said, bowing.
Yeah, yeah, Kiva said, waving her all the way into the room and motioning her to sit at the chair in front of her capacious desk.
Solanodon frowned to himself at this, but excused himself silently. Kiva sunk into her own chair behind her desk.
I'd like to begin by delivering the compliments of the Countess Nohamapeton,
who thanks you for taking control of her local concerns at this turbulent time.
Kiva rolled her eyes at this.
Look, what's your name again?
Senia von der Pelonen.
That's a lot all at once.
I suppose it is, Lady Kiva.
Von der Pelonen, can we just not do the bullshit parts? I mean, you seem like a smart person.
Thank you, Lady Kiva.
So as a smart person, you know as well as I do that of all the things that the Countess Nohama Peten might be feeling toward me right now, gratitude is right down at the absolute fucking bottom. I gave the Emperor evidence that her kids were traitors, that one murdered the other, and now I'm running her fucking company. What she'd actually be wanting to do, I guess, is push me out a goddamn window.
Von der Pelonen smiled slightly at this.
Also, presuming you actually did come from Ter Hatum.
I have.
Then it's likely, given transport times to and from there, that you were sent almost immediately after the Countess got the news about her problem children. In which case, the idea that she is thinking anything about me at all is pretty laughable. What I imagine the Countess Nohama Peten is actually thinking aside from the fuck is, one, how to extract her daughter from an almost certain death sentence, and two, prying me or anyone else who isn't a Nohama Peten from her precious fucking company. Are these reasonable assumptions?
Von der Pelonen took a second before responding.
You're not wrong.
So, in the interest of saving both of us some time, I am asking you to just pretty please get to the fucking point already.
Fair enough, Von der Pelonen said. Then here it is, Lady Kiva. The House of Nohama Peten, which I represent, is asking you to step aside and allow an executive of our own choosing to take over our local interests.
She held up the signet document and placed it on Kiva's desk.
That's the official request. Unofficially, as part of your terms of withdrawal, you will receive a substantial bonus payment.
You mean a bribe?
I mean a bonus payment. The Countess's appreciation for your willingness to step in during a moment of crisis.
I thought I asked to dispense with bullshit.
There's bullshit, and then there's bullshit, Lady Kiva.
Well, you're right about that, at least.
Kiva pointed to the signet document.
I presume you and the Countess both understand that I was put in charge of your house's business by the Emperor, yes? I can't just quit.
We understand that. We also know that the Emperor would be more inclined to allow your exit if you were also willing to voluntarily depart.
Don't be so sure.
And why is that?
Well, aside from the fact that Nadashe Nohama Peten tried to assassinate the Emperor with a spacecraft, which is not great for the reputation of the entire fucking family, there's also the matter of the endemic graft my auditors are finding in your books for the last several years.
Von der Pelonen tilted her head.
And the House of Lagos's ledgers are entirely free of graft and corruption, Lady Kiva? You know as well as I do that skimming off the top, by employees, by executives, and, yes, even occasionally and regrettably by family members, is not an unusual thing. Regrettable, yes. Unusual, no.
This is your argument for returning control to an Nohama Peten? Everybody does it?
To be fair, everybody does do it.
To be fair, not everyone tries to fucking murder the Emperor.
So, this is a no from you.
It's a you have to be fucking kidding me from me.
Von der Pelonen shrugged. As you will. You should know. We intend to ask for your removal anyway.
Good luck with that.
We don't need luck, Lady Kiva. We have your incompetence.
The fuck you say?
You must be aware that there's been a substantial increase in the amount of sabotage of Nohama Peten property and merchandise.
I've heard.
Then you're equally aware this challenges the house's ability to fulfill its business relationships. That damages the house's reputation.
I don't know, Kiva said. I won't argue there's been a spike in sabotage.
But it seems to me the most prominent bit of sabotage was when the Dashe turned a brand new Nohama-Peton ship into fucking scrap metal. As long as we're talking about what damages a house's reputation, maybe that should be put on the pile as well. Fundapalonen frowned at this.
Perhaps the Emperor will see things differently.
I doubt it. Kiva pointed to the signet document. One of those will get you in to see Greyland, but I don't think the Emperor was going to forget your house rose up against her.
Not the house. One of its members.
Good luck making that argument.
I won't be making that argument. The Countess Nohama-Peton will be.
Kiva blinked at this. She's coming here?
Of course, Fundapalonen said and smiled. Lady Kiva, as you astutely note, the reputation of the House of the Nohama-Peton has taken a few hits recently. This is not something the appearance of a humble lawyer will fix.
It's not something 1,000 lawyers will fix. The only way to fix this is to bring the Countess from Terhatum to speak to the Emperor directly.
I'm here to take care of some, sorry, relatively minor preliminaries, like speaking to you. The Countess will handle the heavy lifting.
And when is she arriving?
Fundapalonen glanced at her wrist, which held a timepiece, which annoyed Kiva as being an overly dramatic act.
If the ship she was planning to be on held its schedule roughly 3 days from now,
she looked back up, which gives you that much time to change your mind.
But not that much time, Lady Kiva. Not that much time at all.
Chapter 5.
So how much time, precisely?
Marsh Claremont managed to keep his face composed. He was learning how to do that much, at least. But on the inside, where it mattered, he was smacking his face with his hand and dragging that hand down across his cheeks. His life, for the past month, had been answering time and time and time and time again the same question, in its infinite but mundane variations, for people who didn't want to be convinced by the answer and who didn't have the math to understand why it was going to be true no matter how much they wanted the answer to be different. But this was Mars's job now. Special Assistant for Science Policy to Emperor Greyland II, tasked with communicating the issues surrounding the imminent collapse of the flow to very important people. These included, but were not limited to, Imperial Ministers, Members of Parliament, the heads of noble houses and their entourages, bishops and archbishops of the interdependent church and any other churches, scientists, journalists, high-ranking celebrities, thought leaders, noted public intellectuals, and the occasional talk show host. All day, every day, for the last month.
All day, every day, for the foreseeable future.
At this very moment, Mars had brought his now road-tried and tested presentation to the Imperial Society of Exogeology, which had convened for its biennial convention on Hub. Biennial because it was difficult for members from across the interdependency to haul their respective butts across flow streams that took weeks and sometimes months to get them to where they were going. And at Hub because, simply, all flow streams led to Hub. For now, some portion of Mars's brain volunteered. Mars shoved that part of his brain back down into its hole. One might think that of all groups that Mars would address on the topic of the collapse of the flow streams, it would be scientists who would be the easiest to convince. After all, what Mars had was data. 3 decades of data, researched and codified and presented in a format that nearly every scientist would understand. Charts and graphs and columns and footnotes and, of course, a digital file laden with all the raw information his father, the Count Claremont, had collected over 30 years. But as it turned out, the scientists were uniformly the worst audiences.
Mars could understand flow physicists being balky or dismissive. This was their field, after all, and now some minor lord and even more minor professor from an obscure university at the ass end of space was presenting them information from his dad, informing all of them that everything they thought they understood about the flow was entirely wrong. That was a real kick to the nether regions, intellectually speaking. Honestly, Mars would have been surprised if flow scientists had done anything other than attack, at least until they had time to sit with the data and recognize the terrifying truth of it. But it wasn't just the flow physicists. Every group of scientists, in every discipline,